Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Skeleton Crew, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow barrier-traversing children slash pirates slash droids. There's a lot happening in this episode. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dan. Good to be here. Happy Donkey Bunko to you.
Is this the time where I remind him it's Bunky Dunko and not Donkey Bunko, or we just invented a new phrase?
You know what? The important thing is that it says it right in the one place that matters. But we'll get to that later.
Kat Banish is also here. Hi,
tattoo.
Kat.
Bunky Dunko. We've taken to calling your kid Bunky.
I did send Tony a video of our child saying, my name is Bunky Dunko.
saying.
He said Bunky Dunko. It was fine.
Yeah, he didn't say my name.
I asked him what his name was, and he said
Bunky Dunko. Je m'appelle Bunky Dunko.
We're working. He's still, look, he can barely speak English, much less hoodies, okay?
I'm just, you know.
But his catch was excellent.
Callbacks. We are here to discuss episode 7 of Skeleton Crew, entitled, We're Gonna Be in So Much Trouble.
We're gonna be in so much trouble.
Popular demand, we are continuing our system whereby
by popular demand, did anyone write in actually saying this is a good idea?
Yes.
By demand.
Well, at least
demand.
One person.
by one singular acknowledgement of a thing we did.
I will get the dice out.
Tony's got a die for you.
Oh, but no, yeah. No. Wait, but no, again, we roll a 6 out of
the
die.
The rules are fluid.
No. Cat. Wait. No. Last time we did this,
you're overruled.
We rolled
17. Catherine is the number coming out.
I can
out.
Do it in 17. One sentence.
Okay. But the number that was rolled was 17.
So you can sing 16 lines of Bunky Dunko if you need to afterwards.
I only know one.
That sounds right.
You ready?
Yeah.
Jude Law is a national treasure.
Of what country?
Doesn't matter. The Brits would take him anyways. Hey.
we're counting that as one sentence with commentary.
What happened this episode again? Give me. Oh, I was not prepared for this. I don't do the summaries for a reason.
Two.
Live by the die. Die by the die.
Just imagine, watch the episode back in your head,
what I'm
go to
doing.
Your memory
that's
palace.
What I'm doing. Shut up, guys.
Not so easy, is it?
The pirate eye patch is on the other eye now.
So the kids get into hyperspace and... No, give me those weird face motions, Tony.
This is what you do.
face motions. Wow.
Anyways, let's start with...
That was half a sentence and it just stopped.
John and the pirates get to Ad-Aten, and it looks like a weird gas cloud that no one can get through, but it's not.
I've lost track of counting, Dan.
I'm calling it three so far.
Three? Oh, look at you, counted European style.
They send an evil Calamarian, and he dies.
Calamari is fine.
Nah, I mean, that's offensive, but whatever. Four, we know what you mean. It's a Quarren.
That's correct.
And then suddenly, the kids jump out of hyperspace.
The end? Yep,
and
period.
They get taken in by a tractor beam into the pirate ship. The pirates, including Brutus, try to get the kids off the spaceship, but not before the Claw captures Brutus.
Six.
This would have been the best time ever for the quote, et tu, Jod, but it wasn't when Jod kills Brutus.
Yeah.
Seven.
Jod then turns super dark and just tells all the pirates they're a bunch of kids. Let's go find the thing that's special on this ship that allows it to enter the atmosphere.
Eight.
However, I forgot. That was the scene I forgot. Meanwhile, on Ad-Aten, the parents prove that they are the worst runners ever, but still manage to launch a hokey communication device into space.
Basically
whereby the kids receive those messages, and instead of developing a plan, just charge, thanks to whim.
Nine.
The kids actually succeed by some elegant or bizarre interpretations of the pirate's code, and Smee kicks off all the pirates, and the kids go enter at Aten's atmosphere. It turns out the reason the ship can get through the atmosphere is because it's actually an Aten ship, and it's from the Mint. They make it to Aten's atmosphere, but lo and behold, Jod was there the entire time. And brings out and brings out his lightsaber and threatens the kid. Sidebar, comma, M dash, or actually footnote.
I've lost footnote.
One of those
my
little,
accounting system may not work for this.
A footnote has a sentence in it, just to be
still
clear.
12.
But it doesn't count part of it. Footnotes, that's how you can get to, I used to like always go over the length maximums and just use footnotes.
That's
anyways.
Right. Yep. Story checks out.
Really interesting. We see Jod at this point turn evil with a blue reflection of a lightsaber for something like evil blue lightsaber. Anyways.
That was a sentence.
It was not a sentence.
Was that your sidebar or was that a comment on
that
your
was
sidebar?
The footnote from the M dash.
Okay. Can I say 12 now?
Sure.
All right. 12.
The park opens up and the spaceship enters the Mint in some not great CGI work.
Sorry, Todd Vaziri.
Rough.
It just looks like a ride at Disney. And then it turns out there's over 1,000 giant vaults, and Jude Law has probably the best acting moment of his career when he just goes like gaga over all the gold datteries, which is not a great term, but it's fine. Parents, I think we're on 13. Yeah, come on, guys.
You did a Tony sentence there where you just kept going.
Yeah, but like, you guys need to be better about interrupting me and telling me I'm wrong. Don't let me push you around, guys.
Oh, is that the kind of podcast this is?
Parents are united with kids. Jod had threatened the kids not to tell what's going on, and there's a standoff on the platform where he threatens all the parents with a blue lightsaber.
14.
You got 2 sentences to blow, I guess.
Stephen Fry was obviously the supervisor. Very excited about that. And I loved this episode.
15? 16.
All right, pretty good.
Under budget. You had
I'm only going to count one omission of a critical fact.
Which is?
You skipped Smee that. He killed the droid. Yeah. He killed SM-33 with a lightsaber.
He didn't kill him, though. No.
He cut his head off
Guys, have we ever actually seen that to kill a droid? No,
yes.
They're just going to reattach him. He'll be fine.
Okay.
I will pay you each cut? $5.
Optimistic.
That, like, I will pay you each an ice cream cone that...
just the cone.
Dan was that poster, and it's like, actually, you know, I mentioned this. That Smee will be shown walking around by the end of next episode.
I'm not going to take that action.
That seems like a fair
which means he's not dead. Yeah.
You were shocked. You gasped out loud when that happened.
I was concerned. What was actually happening? I thought Jod was going to step on the little mouse and crush it. That's why I gasped.
You freaked out before that, too, when he killed SM-33. You were like, oh, I forgot the lightsaber.
Mm. Yeah, I was still surprised.
It was a good moment. That's all I'm saying.
It was a good episode. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Jude Law was phenomenal.
Jude Law was really good.
I feel like this was about the episode I expected to see as the setup for, you know, literally like, okay, everyone's here in the same scene now, and They're all gonna have a respectful conversation, wrap this up in about 10 minutes, and then just have a dance number for 20 more minutes next episode.
The things I did not expect
the Jude Law heel turn to be quite so dark. I think he is at this point established as the villain of the show, which I did not think they were gonna go all the way there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we got a little bit of that last episode. I feel like there were people that were surprised this episode, and I was like, didn't you watch the last episode when we were surprised?
Well, he thought he might have a heart of gold and get redeemed.
Yeah, I know.
There's also, he does different bad stuff in this episode, and maybe you parse them different ways. Like, there were a lot of people who were surprised he shot Brutus, and I was like, he was waiting for a time to do that. Yeah, I mean, let me say, I was like, killing Brutus, no. That's just a footnote.
But he was mean to the kids.
Being mean to kids, threatening children with a lightsaber.
That's
Order 66 vibes.
Did you guys pick up the subtext? I think he was very clearly upset I think he was reacting to the fact that I think his childhood must have been so hard, and that like I think
he has mentioned that he came from a planet that like tastes like ash. So
yeah, and he also there in one of the interviews I read with Jude Law, he said something about like he's like I don't think Jod really had a childhood basically, I think he finds that like why aren't you guys tougher? Like how do I don't really know how to deal with that. The other thing
chopping SM-33. I think a lot of people are assuming he'll be okay because he's a droid. I also feel like SM-33's interpretation of the pirate code in this episode was extremely
different. Of a guideline, really, to steal the Pirate of the Caribbean line.
I was okay with it because we have previously established that he did not like Jod, and I think this was just him deciding,
that's good enough.
That guy's a jerk, and I kind of like the kids.
I appreciate it because I feel like he has very strong feelings about specific people for a droid.
I also liked how they bridged the idea that children's claimsies and unclaimsies, it's basically the same as a pirate code. I was like, that seems accurate. Shotgun.
The loophole that you cannot be captain of two ships.
Obviously.
Also, I don't know if either of you caught this, but as I replayed it like later in my head, I realized at one point Jude Law shows up with that helmet from the first episode, and it's only there so SM-33 can punch him in the face and not kill him. Because it immediately takes it off after he gets punched in the face. So I thought that was a funny little bit of work where they're like, oh, we need the droid to take him out, but also we don't need him to punch straight through Jude Law's head.
And also, the pirates were so good. Like at one point, I noticed, I think one of them has like a knit hat that has like a scarf attached to it. Like it looks like one of the like the cloth caps you see. And I love the old lady pirate. She just makes me laugh every time. Of like, who are you and why are you here? It's great.
She plays a very interesting character in Orange is the New Black, and in my head, there's a dotted line. That's how her life of piracy.
I read an interview with Bryce Dallas Howard where she was talking about that character being like, I think they mentioned she is wearing like Clone War era armor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one was Bryce Dallas Howard talking about how she always gets really interested in all the side characters and asks Dave Filoni, but like, what's her story? What's her background? And Dave's like, it's just a person in the background. No. Let's get into this.
Well, I feel like they do.
She was a little bit foregrounded in these two episodes, and I didn't remember seeing her at all. Because the two other scenes we've seen with the pirates are in the very, very first scene of the whole show when they board the ship and there's lots of violence. And then the pirates we see on Port Borgo hanging out.
We did see her there, but it's really I don't remember her. Just on the court martial, and it's very clearly that she is
like,
faithful.
She's like right there, and there's lots of meaningful looks. Like, you know, she gets a decent amount of screen time for a character that has maybe three lines of dialogue.
In my mind, like, she's Jude Law's aunt or mom.
Mm-hmm. Well, he even kind of calls out her, and it's the guy that was in the prison on Port Borgo that he had like a meaningful chat with. I think those are like the two that he trusts among the group,
insofar as he trusts anybody.
What's his name from The Mandalorian is there in a bunch of those
Vane
shots. Vane, he's still there. I don't know why that character is in this show.
No. Pirates.
But it seems like he could have been any pirate.
This is the Vane cinematic universe, Tony. We're only seeing edges of it.
He's actually Snoke.
Poor Glurb that they sent into the...
I do like that the... Yeah, Glurb is a great name for a pirate.
It's a good pirate name.
Good space
so
pirate.
We see the barrier. I was a little confused because there's like the barrier, and then I thought the barrier was like the atmosphere for the planet.
Yeah, same.
But no, it's like you go through the barrier,
and the planet's
and then
inside.
There's a generous amount of space... Yeah. But and then there's a planet.
Anything about it too, I think I can grok that, right? I think Jupiter is how much larger than Earth? Of like, you could easily imagine like
there's
I think
no way
Earth
to know.
Yeah. We do know that. We do know that.
That science, was a joke, nope, cat.
Science has never been there.
I'm gonna go Google this.
But it makes sense. I mean, it is kind of it's a great image, right? Because they come through and it's like, whoa, there's a whole planet inside this planet.
I kind of like, so there's the things in the
1300.
I mean, I guess it's the
1300 Earth can fit in Jupiter.
Yes.
really important to know that.
Yep. So there's the barrier maybe is not naturally occurring. I don't know. And it's got these floating satellite-y deals.
Yeah. That are basically like
that have with colored lighting that'll turn green.
Green when you're good. Yeah.
And it will zap you with lightning bolts and blow you up. Which no, is it cool,
it,
man.
I felt like a very good system. But again, it jumping into the plot a little bit, it was very intriguing that okay, so if we work this out, if Renid got one of the Minch kind of, ships, like it makes
yeah,
it
so there's
how
like
many
a
times
second
he...
reveal. Yeah. Right? Because it's like you're both it's both a hot stolen Mint ship, though the pirates dismissed it as like, oh, it's an antique. And then it also had armor strapped to it, but then they didn't actually use the armor to go through the
yeah, I think the I thought about this more tier. And was like, I think the armor was essentially camouflage.
I agree.
Okay.
To make it look like a broken down, cruddy ship that nobody would want.
And I mm-hmm. question though I have is like, and I assume we will I think there is a decent chance that Stephen Fry is Renid and is the supervisor. I think the question is for me is how many times did he go back and forth between the worlds with that ship stealing the batteries, or did he never succeed? If in well, fact maybe he's dead or took some sort of responsibility for
he
for
must
this
have
group.
Gotten out once because he had his all his crew on the ship and then got there, and then at some point
did
they
he?
Crashed.
No, he may not.
How
he,
do, yeah,
no,
how
no,
do
no.
we know his, that he ever left?
Because he had the ship.
But he could have gotten the ship from a different planet.
Ah, you think he got it not from Atten, but from one of the others?
It's possible.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then took it to Atten, knowing that Atten may have been the safe one. It's also possible
that
the
barrier
was... I think
he only knows
was...
about the location of Atten because he knocked off a Mint ship.
It's also possible the barrier, we still don't know who put that up. Well, it could have. There's also a world where Renid put up the barrier.
That
and
seems like the Republic, but it's unclear. Yeah,
unclear. I also really enjoyed though the fact that when the parents put out their message, they're like, "You should go find a Republic emissary."
Yeah, they're like, "That government failed a while ago. Like, you are two governments behind."
But it definitely is a question of like, okay, they're still producing the Mint. Does everyone on the planet know there's a Mint? Like, what do the parents know? What do the parents not?
They
know?
Do. They tell them at some point. They say
surprised.
The kids aren't supposed to find out until later.
Yeah. Find out later.
Yeah,
about
same when they turn 18.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
the function of the planet. And it was like, why? Like,
but they may not know.
They can't talk to anybody.
They may not know.
You guys
know
live
Mint.
In isolation.
They just may know there's something about the planet living in isolation, right?
I guess.
But they may not know why it's in isolation. I don't
that
know.
Feels like that feels like the plot device so that the kids don't know when they're traveling around.
Yeah.
Like, because they're not supposed to go anywhere.
Yeah.
The secret we're not going to burden you with until you're 18 is that you are sold into a life of servitude as an accountant or financial analyst. It's not a deep, dark secret. It's just... really kind of
it's
boring.
Embarrassing.
I mean, your job security is 100%, but you will never meet a Jedi.
But why? Why do they need analysts for the Mint? There's still something missing here.
Yeah, I mean, there's.
And what's
the grand plan? Look, Kat, I think we need to be prepared that the show is not going to be. Let's just agree on this. The show is nowhere near as interested in that as you are, right?
I think that is highly highly probable. But I'm still waiting for like Renit's ghost to come out and say, like, you know what? Like,
I don't think it's gonna be a ghost. I think it's an actual dude.
I don't know.
Okay,
I was
guys.
Surprised.
That wasn't
I was surprised we heard I'm prepared for him to be like a hollow recording. I'm you know, we
that's
the
possible.
Timeline
that's
on
possible.
When he disappeared
yeah.
is still
that's
yeah.
the
only
question.
Written so, only written down in pirate shanties.
I am still expecting the answer to be like, you know, I mean, there's a couple paths here, right? One is I saw a planet in need and had a turn of faith of good, and I'm here to protect these guys, and I got them set up to thrive. The other one is I'm somehow still alive and decided I'm going to wait out this whole empire thing because, like, no way could survive, and I'm just going to make up a lot of money, and then, like, 20 years, I'm going to come out and
I'm
take over the world.
I'm just in a con that got, you know, carried away from me. I was going to steal all the money, and then I realized I now run all the vaults. Where would I take them?
Yeah, where could you have a better life? And, or, as I said, when, like, he opened that vault, you could not spend that much money in a lifetime.
There was... So, you know, I felt like that sequence moved pretty quickly. I was surprised that they were just like, here is the vault.
The
by
security
the way,
checks are bad.
The security checks are, is your password 12345? They have no
passwords.
Encryption.
We don't bother with
but
passwords.
But I think the
passwords
they got the ship there. That was the check.
Yeah,
anybody could be on the ship.
There's no other questions. They don't ask him a name. They don't ask him, like, what planet did you come from?
It's like if he had a car that said it, like, McDonald's logo on the side and just drove through the drive-thru and expect free food.
I feel like someone should also have been like, it's been 40 years since the last emissary. Like, thank you for coming?
Because... the parent, I mean, especially like a park opened up and revealed the docking bay. And I think there were little CGI people like running away from that park
Scuttling,
who were like, this has never opened up before. But at the same time, the parents are there 5 minutes later. I was prepared that like the next episode would be them being like, there's a secret vault under our, you know, we need to get, we need to file permission. It's like, nope, they're there. So it's like real casual security policy in front of this vault.
It also makes me wonder just more about their monetary control policy. No, seriously.
It was the hesitation.
Never change, Kat. Never change.
But like, how do they, I wonder if like on this planet, they're essentially in a post-money world like Star Trek because there is so much money, but they've got to print the money.
Women have lunch money.
Yeah, I just.
Which was apparently cash. It's not even like
you show them the money. You show them the money and they give you lunch.
Yeah.
But I mean, they don't even have a system where he's got credit at the school.
How do they know they don't have inflation? I'm fascinated about like how they determine payment. How much money does
it could all be, I mean, maybe the prices are all controlled by the government.
Let's go deep on this.
Yeah. Well, that's what the analysts did. Also, are you not willing to believe that some of the analyst jobs are not very good?
or actual jobs.
Jobs. That some of them are Minesweeper.
It just
maybe they're not. Yeah, maybe only one. Everyone's around to have one child. So, like, you know, there's. I mean, there's. It's pretty easy to imagine.
Unless you're a blue elephant, you get two.
Unless you're a blue elephant, no, you, they have, like, actually, several. I think there's a couple.
There's
yeah.
four of them.
Are there four?
There's a lot there's of them.
They only ever talk about one.
Well, he's the greatest one.
He's the problem child.
Dan, when you come from a big family, there's like one kid who's like the good kid. And then there's like the other one.
I wouldn't know.
No, you're from a garbage family. sorry, I just listened to an episode of Biff where you, you lamented that your lot is just to deal with whatever Kat and I yell at you. And so I was leading into it. Kat, can we agree? Dan, garbage family?
She's very careful. She married into that family.
Oh, it's more like, I know one of his cousins listened to this podcast. I'm being very careful with what I say.
Oh,
hi, Tim.
These are recorded? Oh, well. Oh, okay. Let's back up. We can agree Dan's garbage. No. Let's move on to things that aren't garbage.
Any other things that we like that jumped out? I mean, I think to your point, Kat, from the recap, you know, having him be
was a great recap, by the way. You guys can say that honestly.
It was real good. Real efficient. I really wanted to see what happened if you rolled like a 5.
I would have still said Jude Law is a national treasure.
And then you would have been done.
He's not from a different country.
It's still national. It's just not our country.
There are other nations.
Yeah,
you're such a jingoist. It's fine.
Don't be so America first, Tony.
I just love my ivory coat. It keeps me so warm.
but the point of like, you know, he's not, Jod isn't a Sith. He's just an opportunistic like wretch who happens to have some force powers and, you know, is smart enough to use a lightsaber. And it's a blue lightsaber, so it's not like a evil.
It's not his lightsaber.
He didn't corrupt it like we saw in the Acolyte, right?
Interestingly though, Renan had it. Maybe Renan, Stephen Fry as a Jedi will be the best twist of all. But no, I did actually want to talk about this. I've talked about this many times before, the idea that small stories are the best stories. And when you get too big, too bad, it just becomes, you get desensitized. And
when you say small, you mean monetary finance.
Yeah, fundamentally. Analysis. It's really about the cost of capital. No, what I mean by that is like, this is sort of like the failure of episodes 7 through 9 of like, oh, it's the Emperor, it's the end of the universe, it's the biggest, baddest battle ever. And I really appreciate the villain here is not a Sith, right?
It's just a pirate.
It's just a pirate. Yeah. It's a pirate with the lightsaber and force powers. It's kind of cool. It's the same reason I like Andor so much, because it's Anton Lesser, right? It's just a bureaucrat. So terrifying. And it's so much, so much better. And I think it really works as a villain rather than the big bad Sith.
I read something, and did not read it closely. When I say read something, I mean I saw a headline to a Star Wars site that I'm not going to read, because especially a lot of them are like, Star Wars fans can't believe that something happened, and it's like, I can believe that I saw the thing.
Can't everyone else believe?
Well, it was a, will Jod be in the Mandalorian and Grogu movie? And like people being like, oh, obviously this is a major character now, and so he'll be in that. And I have no idea. I'm assuming they have nothing to base that on. But I'm also like, to me, it's like, no, you don't need to do that.
That character is not important enough.
You can have just because, and they're like, as a timeline show, it's very possible that Jod could be in the Mandalorian movie either before or after the events.
This is called SEO clickbait, is what it's called.
Does Dan, does this work? are we killing people with or brains with
us
all of
personally?
This garbage? Well, no,
society.
But like, yeah,
yes.
Okay, it's just it's bad, and those people should feel bad.
Yeah, those people. I don't even think those people should feel bad, because I think most of those people are probably getting paid
not people
peanuts. Well, the people who are there are getting paid peanuts to write things that are being they're being told to write by editors and try to make it as engaging as possible. It's not their fault. It's mostly the fault of like the system that has necessitated you needing to generate clickbait garbage headlines in order to make your site survive, which is like a bad system.
I feel like we've hit a nerve here, Tony.
Sorry.
Personal. About, yeah, so I don't.
Also,
I can't
believe you wouldn't think he would be in the movie.
Clearly,
no,
he is the Mandalorian. He's going to take over. He's going to wield the Darksaber.
Well, he did. He did wield a saber. Therefore, Star Wars fans are outraged that he might hold another saber. What do you think? I'm just saying. I in addition to stories that are small, I also appreciate stories that can be contained and don't have to interconnect anything.
Yeah.
Or if they are going to interconnect, like that guy Vane who's in the background because like he's got an action figure deal or something, can be inconsequential.
He's very important. He's the key to all of this.
Why is he there?
I don't know. I think about that every time I see him. I was like,
which one is
this
him?
Guy, he's the...
You don't need to know.
No,
that information
know.
Will not improve
not
your life. He's got kind of little... He's like beige with little spiky stuff on his face.
Oh, yeah, him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super
I don't even
memorable.
Remember him.
Yeah, he's from the Mandalorian.
He's in the last episode.
I don't remember the Mandalorian.
Yeah,
an important scene in the Mandalorian where he flies away and leaves the show.
Like Darth Vader at the end of A New Hope. Aha, I escaped. Oh no, we let Vane get away.
Oh, that's right.
What was his name again? Not even that.
No.
Which episode?
Remember how the pirates attack the Carl Weathers' town? In season 3, all the pirates attack. Yeah, it's not a great plot.
He has his own ship, and there's the big ship.
Yeah, don't they crash land the ship? Isn't that when they cut the TIE fighter in two?
No, that's okay. I think you are not remembering any of the events of the Mandalorian season 3.
It's probably for the best.
And you know what? That's not your fault.
It's not.
Nope.
It's not.
I like how you keep connecting. You're like, oh, that thing that happened in Mandalorian season 2? And we're like, nope, not that. Nope,
there's a whole nother season.
But I remember those things. Yes.
Yeah, that's true. I do want to say a word about, I think the kids do great in this episode. I do like when it goes from, I do love Fern's like, all right, I need to come up with a plan. And Wim's like, it's like, it gets so close to working.
It does work.
Yeah, it does kind of work.
The kids grew on me a lot, which I guess was their job.
Yeah. I love that they take the claw and grab Brutus and KB and pretending to be like, no, leave us alone.
Well, and we'd seen,
a good plan.
Everything follows kids' movie logic, where anything that was shown before is something that will come back. Well, so it's like literally one of the first scenes with Fern and KB was them like throwing their voice with technology. And so it's like, use that when you're meeting scary pirates.
I'm impressed that we got two uses of the claw. Both that's where the wise elders came from, and for capturing Brutus. So like, they got several uses out of that claw.
If kids had access to a robot space claw, they'd use it all the time.
Yep. I enjoyed that. I do like that they, I like that scene with Jude kind of yelling at them, like, about being, like, spoiled brats, essentially. Like, you can see it kind of hits.
He's not wrong. It's unkind. They're children. It's not their fault that they didn't grow up on a war planet like you did, dude.
I was like, and Wim, you're the worst of all. Like, poor Wim.
So mean.
So mean.
Oh.
Well, Wim's got to kick him in the shins before the end of this, right?
Yeah.
That seems about right.
He's not walking away from this with the next episode is not he murders them and their parents and then we 20 minutes on a shopping spree. I mean, there was a very conspicuous shot when his ship lands with the like parking brake
clamp?
Thing engaging.
Yeah,
I was like, that ship is not leaving.
Yeah.
They'll let anybody in, but the rules for checking out are very thorough.
You can come in and we will load your ship full of money, but
help yourself to our easily disturbed stacks of money. But before you leave, there's some paperwork.
Let's talk about their stacking techniques, because I think there's some problems there.
Well, they're not really expecting people just to just get their faces up in there.
They should have buckets.
Do you know a lot of giant stacks of gold coins that fall over if you just breathe on them wrong?
Well, Scrooge McDuck can swim in them perfectly fine.
Hold on. Scrooge McDuck keeps his money in a bin, which is clearly the appropriate way to store large amounts of loose money if you're going to be liquid.
Not
keeping
in
it stacked.
IKEA stacks.
IKEA stacks, no good. Those are going to get turned. Yeah, because Scrooge McDuck is just in a, you know, it's in a, basically a swimming
pool. It can breathe.
Yeah, I think Smog
we can
the same
question
thing too.
Smog does
why
the
does
same
he
thing, yeah.
Yeah, pile, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Certainly we can question why keep so much liquid, why in that form? And the answer is fear of banks. So Doc's
are we
yes,
actually our... should we get like a you know how should we start advertising to like buy gold as sort
I was
of like
say, our... I want to pilot our I'm going to pitch our Star Wars show that's about a bank run.
Ducks are historically unbanked people.
Ooh,
you need to
is
know
it a
this.
Liquidity crisis or a solvency crisis?
It's up to us. We can decide to tell whatever story we want between mm-hmm. those two.
Dan definitely knows the difference. He's just not going to tell
I'm
you
just
right
saying
now.
The, you know, the imagination is limitless, but also one of those. I vaguely remember my sections about the Great Depression in the financial crash of 1929 in my history textbooks, but vaguely is doing a lot of
someone can probably correct me, but fundamentally liquidity is the idea that you actually have enough money, but you don't have enough cash on hand, which I think is basically what happened to SVB this year, and insolvency is like, the fundamentals are wrong, you don't actually have enough assets to cover your debts. So often it's liquidity crises. That's what I think also happens in It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, he just doesn't have enough money.
Doesn't have enough actual money on hand. Because all that you have enough assets to cover your liabilities.
Your house is tied up in Jim's house, and Jim's house is tied up in Frank's house. So I'm doing my best Jimmy Stewart there.
But if anyone thinks I'm wrong, please write in.
There's going to be like at least one economics professor who comes out of the woodworks here. It's like, my moment to shine. Cool. Anything else? So one episode left in which all the... Everything gets figured out and everybody lives happily ever after.
I think this show has been pretty solid. I think it knows what it wants to be. You know, some episodes were better than others, but this is not like other shows where it's like, oh, I guess there's an episode. There's no way this is going to come together in a satisfying way. This show is not what I thought it would be.
I think
yes, this show will not delve as deeply into economic policy of the Old Republic as any one of us wants, and we just have to live with that. That is the price of who we are.
I do think, you know, I mean, looking at the people,
that's what brings us together, Dan.
I'm just happy we have a mint. I think it is, it's about as good as I'm going to get, and I'm okay with that.
You also got the spa planet had the banking clan there.
Yeah,
you know,
true. Kat,
this is as much economic monetary policy as you are going to get in a Star Wars children's show.
Excuse me. Would you like to not talk about the Trade Federation and taxation? There's a rich history of finance in Star Wars, is all I'm saying. Anyway, I was going to say, I do think if you look at the people involved in the overall creation of this show, that I feel like they do have a good handle. I mean, John Watts, you know, I know various people have different opinions of some of the Spider-Man movies, but I thought Spider-Man Homecoming is a pretty great movie that understands, again, exactly who that character is and how to tell a satisfying arc about that character. And so I have no trouble believing that they kind of have a good idea of, like, here's the story we're trying to tell with these kids. And it feels to me like kind of what we've talked about in the past with, like you said, shows knowing what they want to be and people going in saying, I want to tell this story. It worked really well with Andor.
Yeah.
It worked pretty well with this. I think this is up there for me so far. I'm kind of want to see how the last episode goes, but I feel like this is basically gotten itself into the top tier of Star Wars live action TV.
I think I've said that from like the first episode that than Andor, this is my second favorite show of the recent shows, like not including Rebels, etc., all that.
But yeah, I mean, I think there were individual elements of the Mandalorian that did really
season
well.
One, maybe season two, but yeah.
But certainly recently they feel like they know
and of
what
course
they
want we to be. Don't even, you know, Book of Boba Fett is just something.
it is worth it just for the like
best
pure WTF of it all.
I
the lizard
think about
that climbed up the nose.
I think about Book of Boba Fett. I don't think about Obi-Wan. That's the difference.
Oh, I totally forgot about that until just now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that show, but it didn't really
leave
a mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Book of Boba Fett. I also thought about that.
So weird.
I thought about it recently too. I don't remember. Maybe it was something that I was like playing the Star Wars Outlaws game or something, and you're on
there was
Tatooine
some interview.
And something happens. You're like, oh, okay.
I think about that Vespa game. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Tony.
No. I also think about the Vespa game. There was some interview, except it was like one of those one paragraph interviews where really it's an article quoting somebody else who actually did an interview, of course.
Naturally.
But Ming-Na Wang showed up and like no one had told her that it wasn't actually the Mandalorian. And I was like, that tracks.
Yeah. You know, there is a
she thought
someday
she was showing up for the Mandalorian. And it was fascinating, like, nope, it's a different show.
There is a fascinating behind the scenes story to be told about that, because I feel like there is a strong element of like, it was kind of supposed to be the season 3 of The Mandalorian.
It seems like one of those weird, boring answers where it's like a contract reason. Like
maybe?
The same reason that the Marvel Civil War movie is a Captain America movie and not an Avengers movie.
I guess, but this feels a lot more like we actually didn't think we were going to be making an entire show and then suddenly decided we were going to.
These things get away from us. It's not like a lot of people have to come together and make decisions.
That's just it. You feel like there's such a big organization that that should not happen, and yet it reminds you that organizations are just made of people. There was something else I was thinking about with the Book of Boba. I don't even remember now what I was. I think I was watching something else, and I was like looking up one of the people in it, and was like, oh, they were in the Book of Boba Fett. Who were they? And they were one of the Vespa gang. And I was like, oh my God. Well, I'm glad those people still have work.
Again, I feel like we could have written a much, much better plot to that show. I think there was a whole other story about the Tatooine, the history of it.
We wanted that show to be several things, but it was not.
It was also several things.
It was also
not.
None of them were good.
Not the things.
It was so, because the ingredients are still, there's, you know, I mean, it's like, is this going to be about Rancor taming? Is it going to be about
the sand people?
The factions that are controlling Mos Espa. Isn't Danny Trejo in it for like 4 minutes?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many.
I just
many
started
things.
Flipping through the list for a second, and I was like, oh my God. Matt Berry was in this? Oh yeah. Jennifer Beals was in this? Yeah. I totally forgot.
Yeah,
this
is, as that she's the runs the casino.
Club owner. Yeah.
In two scenes they do nothing with. Matt Berry was like a sassy droid.
Oh, that's right.
Executed. Yeah.
Here's a hot take that I think for now with the year behind us, for all of the bizarreness and complete failures of Book of Boba Fett, I think it is a better show in my memory than Ahsoka. Because at least it was weird and different and memorable. I cannot remember a darn thing about Ahsoka other than the guy who wasn't important at all and was never named.
I just read that they recast the guy who died. So there's that.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to talk about that.
Should we move on to things that are not in this episode?
We'll move on. Yeah. We'll
we
move on to things.
That?
Yeah. We kind of did. We're segueing. Yeah. So they.
Star Wars news check.
Star Wars news check. From the HoloNet.
Bunky Dongo, here's the news.
Ray Stevenson played Baylor Skull in Baylan Skull?
Baylan Skull, I think.
In Ahsoka season 1, and I think the three of us all kind of liked him as a character and were interested
great.
Where he was going. And then Ray
interesting
Stevenson
character.
Sadly passed away.
Very suddenly.
So they have now replaced him with Rory McCann, who is probably best well known from being on Game of Thrones as the Hound, but also appeared in movies such as Hot Fuzz, in which he is the guy,
the
who,
guy
says,
who goes,
Yorp.
Yorp.
Apparently he's also in Jumanji, The Next Level.
Okay. I think both he and Ray Stevenson are Scottish, so maybe they got that going for them. Is Ray Stevenson
Scottish?
Scottish.
She is Scottish.
Rory McCann is definitely Scottish. I couldn't remember if Ray Stevenson was or not.
He was.
I have to say, I was. I don't know if it was just like what I got as.
Oh, sorry,
random
Ray Stevenson
images.
Northern Ireland born. So, sorry, everybody.
So American. I don't know if it's just because they're like the first images that came up when I Google image searched both of them, but like I was looking at an image of them side by side, and I was like, I actually think they look relatively similar.
For a recasting,
it helps. I think they're both big dudes with big broad shoulders. I'm assuming he'll have a grayish beard,
at least do his hair and everything.
And they don't need to make the character look exactly like the other character, and I don't know if it's one of those things where like somebody will mention that he looks different or not. I'm always a little surprised there's shows where they recast people and no one mentions that. I mean, they recast Albus people in the Dumbledore Game of Thrones shows a million times.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the tone of the show. Like, it can be had as a joke, but I think if you're trying to be a little too serious, like, you kind of just want to be like, let's not even move on. Yeah, let's just move on and just take it as...
I don't know. I am glad that they aren't... I think I'm glad that they aren't writing around it. We've seen Star Wars do that, and it, you know, it's not great.
Yeah. No, I think that guy... I think Rory McCann's a pretty good actor. I've enjoyed him in several... Not that I say I enjoy those characters all the time, because he plays some disturbed characters, but he's very good at what he does. And I think, you know, if you're picking somebody to, like, pick up that baton, he seems like a reasonable choice. But I'd be interested to see how they pull it off.
Dan, he's the voice of Megatron in Transformers Earthspark.
I was going to say that, but I was like, I don't think you know.
He was in Gladiator 2.
He was in Gladiator 2?
He was.
Who's in Gladiator 2?
He's one of the general of the legions or whatever.
Watch that, by the way. Great movie. Absolutely horrible, but a really great movie.
I haven't seen it. There's your three perspectives on Gladiator 2.
Should we shift to listener mail? Dan's been cackling to himself all week from listener mail and refuses to share.
Wow,
there's a lot of mail. We're going to go over
things complicated in the house.
Well, I don't like to tip my hand. You know how it is. All right, sorry. I'm trying to find my. I have many open tabs now that we have Blue Sky.
I guess Kat and I will just have a thrilling side conversation while we wait for Dan to get his act together, right, Kat?
Yeah, it's not like he didn't know we're doing a podcast tonight.
I have like four different tabs to read. As a reminder, you can email us at acp@theincopple.com.
Oh my god,
it's a mess. It's a mess on here.
One of them is like your Wordle, Dan.
Are we being too mean to Dan? I feel like we went from mean to comically mean to just mean again.
You had 16 sentences. I had some time to finish up. okay, so we are also now on Blue Sky at acp.theincomparable.com. And, of course, we are on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights. Michael writes in, membership perk suggestion, fortnightly moonlighting watch along.
Are we playing Fortnite while we watch? Tony liked that. Dan did not.
Mainly, I believed for half a second that you didn't know what Fortnite meant. I was like, no, Kat knows what Fortnite means.
Anyways, it's been suggested that moonlighting will come into play. We'll see.
We're doing March, right?
There is a members episode coming. We'll talk about that when we've decided what we're doing.
By next episode of this show.
I remember when this was a podcast.
Yep.
It was minutes ago.
Boring Programmer, that's their name, not mine, writes, first time I've listened to this pod, and OMG, the chaotic energy Kat brings is sending me. to which I think I replied something about, this is pretty new or something. And they replied, can't fool me, went back to catch up on all of the Skeleton Crew episodes, and I'm afraid the insanity appears to be endemic.
I love that this is like the to pick up all episodes being last episode, being like, yeah, I'll start a new Star Wars podcast. I'll jump in here.
I love it. Welcome.
Hi.
A lot of people stop listening right now, too.
Yeah. We have what they call in the industry a high churn rate.
Yeah. All churn.
All right, couple on Mastodon. Brent writes, he wrote last week about people wishing a happy New Year's Eve being weird, and it turned out he meant it was supposed to be New Year's Eve Eve, and whether that was upsetting.
That makes a lot upsetting. More sense.
I'm willing to engage with that as a legitimate question that has all of the words in it. That's a weird thing to say, and you're right to be upset.
It makes me less upset than anti penultimate. Well,
but that makes you very upset. So there's not really, you don't have a lot of room to go on the scale, right, Kat?
Yeah, no,
let's be honest, is it the word or is it the word and how certain people say that word?
I think it's the word and really the people who use that word.
Oh, it's not just how they say it, but who they are.
Yeah.
Deep down inside and what it says about them.
It's a little bit like, what's the scale they use for hurricanes and for like tornadoes?
They're different scales.
They're different scales. It's like one of the saffron scales.
It would be really convenient if they were the same. You know what? Also earthquakes. The Richter swirly go fast scale.
You know, a really strong earthquake can make a tornado.
That's not true.
I'm pretty sure I've watched a movie where that happened.
There were sharks in it. Yeah, you beat me too. But no, the idea that I think it's logarithmic of like that it's not a linear scale in force, but a exponential increase in force. Same thing, like my disdain for words increases exponentially.
Because at first it's the word, and then it's the person, and then it's yourself for the choices you've made that brings you into connection with that person.
That's 100% true.
It goes deep.
I regret every Saturday night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now and going backward, yeah.
Brent also suggests a newish podcast name, ACP, a chaotic podcast. Not bad.
Oh, that works. Acronyming. That actually works. Yeah.
Eric wrote into suggestion for the new show summary game should involve phonetic punctuation a la Victor Borge. As a longtime Victor Borge fan, Victor Borge is a Danish comedian who also is a pianist. He is great. He is funny. He's a charming old man. But one of his long-running routines is called phonetic punctuation, where he reads a little like book, and then he's like, "Well, you know, you got to be able to pronounce the punctuation." And so he has sound effects for each of them. It's like a period is, and a comma is. And he'll read an entire thing, and he'll put all the things in, and it's great. It's very, very funny. And so I think they're being suggested we should add that into our number of sentences, but then you'll know which punctuation you're using, right?
What sounds do you want to use for which ones?
Well, I mean, he has to establish them canonically, I think. So period, comma, dash. You can't do that?
Do that again? I think I can. Tony, can you do it?
The Zoom totally killed it. I couldn't even hear it. That's fine.
A little better.
Anyways, quotation mark is, of course, two commas up top, or if you're left-handed.
really getting all the money on your stereo mic there, Dan.
Colon, two periods over the other. It's a semicolon. Dash. M dash, a little longer. What do you want?
You're cracking yourself up over there.
Exclamation point is a vertical dash with a period underneath.
So when you said you had to do research before this episode,
no, it wasn't this. I just knew this off the top of my head. I saw him live at Symphony Hall once when I was a kid.
Look at how happy he is.
So good. His routines are very good. Anyways, thank you, Eric, for giving me this opportunity. I've really enjoyed it.
Lifetime in the making.
Ryan wrote, well played. I just spent that intro 15 seconds trying to work out what the hell was playing by and from where. Yes, I used Bunky Dunko as the intro music last week.
And going forward for every episode.
I don't know about that. Grievous Angel writes, loving this season of ACP really magnifies the pleasure of Goonies in space, because I guess we are Goonies.
We're the right age for the Goonies.
I never really watched it very much. Anyways, Brent also writes, and I can't wait for the Moonlighting podcast to kick off this year. And I think Bunky Dunko Coffee and Donuts, BDCD, good acronym, shop could be ACP's next endeavor. I think there's one on Port Bogor already. There's probably four. They're all across from each other. Let me come back to that one. Aaron also added, making the shirt look like the Dunkin' Donuts logo is a stroke of genius. Well done, Tony.
We got to explain what the t-shirt is.
Yeah,
though.
People don't know what you're talking about.
We didn't announce the t-shirt.
People don't know what you're talking about, Dan. Get it together.
Tony, would you like to discuss our t-shirt?
I mean, not particularly.
Okay.
Oh, but I will. We made a shirt because people have been asking us to make a shirt for a while. We made a shirt that says Bunky Dunko on it in a legally distinct orange and pinkish purpley kind of font with a skull and crossbows on it. You can see it at hellonerds.shop. It looks like something else. I originally made it as a joke and Kat said, make that one. And so it happened.
And this is a really stupid question, but do people outside of New England know what Dunkin' Donuts is?
I believe they are a nationwide brand.
Okay. Sometimes I forget, right?
Yeah, they are, and they are, in fact, I believe, have a few scattered international locations. This is not an actual statement, so for purposes of legal reasons, everything I'm about to say after that, assume I mean the opposite. The shirt design looks similar to a popular New England coffee and donut chain, which was basically mainly just a coincidence because the word Dunko has several letters in it that line up with that. And I was teaching myself a new graphic design program and amused myself. I specifically used a Star Warsy font and not a legally offending font. But I thought I made a funny graphic, and I sent it to Kat, and Kat said, put that on a shirt.
I think you sent it to both Dan and me, and we're both like, oh, yeah, that one. Definitely that one.
You responded very quickly, and I was like, okay. I also made a version that you can't buy yet, and so I won't talk about that one. But I discontinued. You can't get Perkle and Squiggs anymore.
Oh, I gotta update our show text then.
Yeah, you can only support us by buying Bunky Dunko, available on several color choices. Do whatever makes you happy.
Did I ever tell you that I went to shop. Disney World in my Perkle and Squiggs shirt? And as I went in, the security guard stopped me and asked if I was a lawyer.
To be clear, this shirt says Perkle and Squiggs, attorneys at law.
Yeah. Were you, I mean, that does seem, I mean,
weird in many ways.
Were they going to keep you out if you said yes?
He was trying to have a nice conversation. He seemed like a perfectly nice guy.
People shouldn't talk to
each other. I don't think they removed you from the line because you were wearing the shirt. I think it's important to make that clear.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes
I believe
the story
you had to go through
different.
Because you were pushing our child in a stroller.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
It wasn't like, you, out of line. Are you a lawyer? That would be very strange. It was more like, oh, I see that you're already in this line. How's your day going? Are you a lawyer? Anyway, Rowan writes in thinking about alternative Star Wars podcast names, but as riffs of other popular podcasts, the Jod Rogan experience.
Don't like that.
Nope.
Sorry. This is not a critique of the idea, just the feelings it brings up in me.
Pod Race Save America and The Diary of a C-3PO. I don't even know which one that's referencing.
I will say, I during the episode watching, I did turn to Dan at one point, being like, "I cannot wait till Jod and Wim's father see each other again in this episode."
Obviously, they used to be married. We're not making fun of you, listener, for that one. It was the obviously part.
Still, I loved it. I loved it so much. I cannot tell you how much I loved it.
Illiterate writes, thanks for indulging me in rolling the dice last week. I couldn't stop laughing. I'm just glad Kat rolled a high number. I'd have felt guilty if the roll was three.
I think the lower number is easier. Oh. I think high number is you end up,
you pad.
You don't know what to do with it. Yeah,
you start, you don't know how to pace it.
You either run out or, I mean, I think I had a high number first time and I was like doing it too micro level.
Yeah.
So it's five or six is easy.
All right, and now I have two pieces of mail that I was saving. This one is my favorite. Bobby writes in, you probably weren't trying to have the foremost Hutties / Bunky Dunko podcast around. Assumes facts, not evidence, Bobby. But a possible translation is in The Phantom Menace. At 35 minutes and 10 seconds, when Watto tells Anakin, clean the racks, then you can go home. Bunky Dunko is clearly audible in the second half of his Hutties. Thanks for reading. Love the show. I fact-checked this today. It is true. Watto tells him, like, you can do this, and you can very clearly hear Watto say, Bunky Dunko, at the end of that.
So what that means, though, is essentially there is a Hutties Bible in Disney somewhere.
I'm going to call it a dictionary. Although, I believe one of the reasons that Galactic Star Cruiser closed was because they had to put a Hutties Bible in every room in the hotel. It's very expensive.
Does it make anyone uncomfortable that Hutties is such a dominant language?
It is a little weird. I was going to say, I've been playing Star Wars Outlaws, and you wander around, and people frequently, it is considered like a lingua franca.
Yeah.
Specifically, of the underworld.
Of the underworld,
like.
Yes.
I don't think that's surprising at all. I think it's like a trade language. Like, what did all the pirates speak in Tortuga?
Pirates.
I think they probably spoke a lot of languages.
Esperanto.
Yeah, I don't know.
The international language of pirates.
No, I just, you know, I mean, look, maybe there are some really great huts out there, but Star Wars seems convinced that they only show us
all right.
What's mainly impressive is they're all gang lords. Like, none of them are working their
show,
way up.
Show
they're
pitch.
All in management.
Well, it's kind of like the Klingons. You only ever see the warriors, but like, I want to see the Klingon farmers, which you do actually get in Lower Decks.
I was going to say, you occasionally do. There's that one, I think
there's
it's a TNG or a Deep Space Nine episode.
Yeah,
there's a
lawyer.
There's a Klingon scientist.
He defends Miles, right? Like, because of course he has to.
But and like, they're all pretty clear, like, yeah, our culture's not built around this, and we're like, you know, we're like second class. I think the message is that all the like the rich like connected Klingons are warriors. Like that's like the thing that you do as a dilettante.
Well, basically. And all the Ferengi are greedy, and all the Romulans are just. I don't know, they're kind of snarky and mean.
We only meet the Romulans that are like in the military.
Spy Romulans.
But like all the Hutts are not just in crime.
Well, so here's my pitch.
They're
could
in
we
crime
have like a,
management.
Could we have like a philanthropist Hut? Like a whole show about a like a Hut who's just like really giving and like supports a lot of local causes. And then all the gangsters come after him because he's like, you ruin our reputation.
They don't seem to be with other Hutts either, right? It's
no.
like... There's one Hut and they have a gang of 50 people beneath them. Maybe two. There was those two, like, I forget if they're twins or brother and sister or whatever that we
I
met
would do
in.
It. Maybe yeah. the young Padawans. Have we ever seen a Hut Jedi?
Not yet.
No, not to my knowledge.
It's on the list at the back of the
could be
office. He's got Hut Jedi, Ewok Jedi, and then you know,
it's just two decks of cards, and you flip them over, and you see what you get. I was gonna say when we see Jeremy Allen White playing Jabba the Hutt's son in the Mandalorian movie, maybe he'll be a Jedi.
Hands.
That was a video joke. Not great for a podcast. All right. And one final piece of mail, I believe. Let me just check and make sure it was only one. Nope. I've got several. Never mind. Several pieces of mail left. Chris writes, this should have been a TV show. Following up on last week's This Should Have Been a Movie segment. How about This Should Have Been a TV Show? Which Star Wars theatrical release would have been better as a Disney Plus series? I would nominate The Last Jedi. I think there would have been a lot of potential and a longer, less rushed take on the relationship between Rey and Luke, which is by far the best part of the movie.
I think and you could not make a worse episode 9.
I was going to say, I would challenge that. I'm just trying to think how bananas that would have been if you'd stretch it into an 8-part series. Like, do you think they're going to go into the existence of Exegol and how all those people get there? No. It's just going to be 7 more episodes about those horses.
What horses?
There are horses. They ride across a Star Destroyer at the end of that movie.
Yeah. I don't remember. I've only seen that movie once, and that's more than enough for me. That's my opinion. Anyways, you guys?
I wonder if Solo could have been better as a TV show. Just because, I even think about the parts of it that maybe are a little disjointed, like the, you know, there's the part where they're like, I don't know, maybe it's just because the, like them planning the train heist, that feels like that's an episode. Yeah. Like Han Solo in prison and meeting Chewbacca, that could be an episode. I feel like that might have worked better. It's got a weird shape to it as a movie. I mean, it's one of those movies that's like, I mean, I enjoy it. I don't think I know I don't enjoy it as much as Dan. I know Dan enjoys it far more than the average Star Wars
that's
fan,
true.
Which is fine. You like what you like, Dan. But I mainly it's like, I feel like that's a movie where I walked out of it and it's like, I can tell that this is a movie that went through reshoots. I don't like when I have that feeling anymore. It's like one of those, like, I wish I didn't see the seams on it. And it's like, maybe that could have, you know, they could have given it some room to breathe. So
I think you're right. I think that actually would have made a really good TV show.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the reason I keep hoping that rumored Donald Glover Lando show will actually happen, which I'm increasingly skeptical of. That show was announced years ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been
and I feel
a
like
long time.
Donald Glover's career.
He keeps talking about like he
bigger.
Wants to do it, and they keep getting mentioned. But like, yeah, I think it behooves everybody to keep everybody on the hook for that one is my feeling.
Yeah.
I would throw out, honestly, for years, I had the idea that I was going to like put together, this is my utterly ambitious, never going to happen project, but like radio drama versions of the prequels based on like more extrapolations from the original trilogy, like things that we knew in the original trilogy and sort of like retell them based on like how we kind of thought they were going to go. And I do think very much as, I mean, and you know, Clone Wars did this, but I think almost any of the prequels would have benefited from being a series where you could spend more time with those characters. Certainly, you know, Anakin's fall, if nothing else, is terrible and makes zero sense in a movie.
The thing we forgot to show in the movies, and so they made a
they made an entire animated series about it. Yeah, but like I think about elements of you know, episode one even that I think would be really interesting and like fun to do. Like again, I would rewrite a bunch of the story, but I think there's interesting stuff in there, and I think you could. Let me put it this way. I think it's more likely that in our lifetimes we see a remake of the prequels than that we see a remake of the original movies.
I haven't seen it.
It's close, but I think the prequel, like, you can thread the needle there, right? Because you don't offend all the fans who are going to be immediately up in arms if you're going to remake the originals. Whereas if you remake the prequels, only half the fans will actually care. And the other half will be like, yeah, you probably should.
I was wondering, and I think I was thinking about this because I just, like, and I think this is the thing that came out a while ago and somehow I missed it, is HBO has an animated version of Watchmen now.
Yes, I did miss this too.
Yeah, and I don't know how much you... Yes.
Interesting.
So they have an animated version of the Watchmen comic, which is weird because we have a movie, the Zack Snyder movie, which is a pretty slavish remake of the comic, which, you know, I think is almost one of the things... I feel like, you know, and I like Watchmen a lot. I'm that kind of comics nerd. I feel like the movie is kind of disappointing in that I feel like it didn't actually have anything to say or do about it, and then it made some changes that nerds get mad about, and some of them I think so. It's like, I don't know, I look at that and I'm like, why did we mean to make this?
Right? Same thing with Disney and like all the versions of Lion King, the live,
I don't
like,
understand
what,
that
why?
Either, but I think those are somewhat successful and people are going to see them. They also seem to make them at a pace that I don't understand, where they're making many of them.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys are going to run out of stuff to remake real fast.
Yeah.
So I guess I was thinking about that Watchmen thing and kind of wondering why that exists. And the thought popped into my head that, like, man, I don't really want to see them remake the original trilogy. That seems wholly unnecessary. Something beyond unnecessary has zero relevance to whether it happens in Hollywood or not. And you know what? Probably a really kind of easier way for them to do it would be they'd do some kind of animated remake of the original trilogy, whether it was 3D or 2D style. I feel like that seems inevitable.
I think it's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, and I did enjoy the classic, like, around, it came out in the 2000s or so, there were Star Wars manga. Which are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, and it's even like, do we need radio adaptations? I don't know. People like them.
The radio adaptations are great, but they're also like, essentially, this is literally what it is. They turned a movie into an episodic series.
Yeah.
And it works real well.
They're quite good. I remember growing up with them. I think there's also something pulling from the Batman thread of, like, I always joked probably now 15 years ago that we were likely to see like a gritty reboot of Star Wars before sort of Disney took it over. And I wonder if there's... Sometimes I feel like movies go through tones, and I think we went through a very grim period for the past 15 years, and now we're going a little back more blue sky. If there was a certain moment where, like, you know what, we're gonna do Star Wars again, but we're gonna do a gritty, really dark take on it. Or
that,
like,
was Rogue One, basically.
Yeah, which I loved. But yeah, I don't know.
That's good.
Only
good
time
email.
Will tell.
Corey writes, 555 numbers, longtime TPK fan and incomparable member here, but recently subscribed to ACP. I haven't watched any of the Star Wars show yet. Corey, I love you. Why are you listening to this show? I mean, it's great. I'm glad that you're here. I assume a lot of what we're talking about makes no sense. I'm old enough to have watched a few episodes from Moonlighting as a kid when my parents were watching it.
Mainly, I assume we must come up really high in the listings when you search for Moonlighting podcasts.
But mainly,
Churn is the name of the game.
Mainly, I'm here for Kat griefing Tony and especially Dan.
Everybody loves Kat.
Yeah.
So.
I'm only on one podcast.
Buddy.
Yeah. I'm driving here.
It's probably for the best. Regarding the 555 phone numbers, as a phone engineer, you hit my realm of knowledge.
Oh, I cannot wait to learn more.
While all 555 numbers used to be reserved for fictional use, with the increased demand for phone numbers, they have limited to just the range of 555-0100 through 555-0199. Watch for it in your favorite old movies, and you can spot the change. Love the show. Need more Kat on TPK.
What? We just learned something.
Wait, so
real.
What is that? I missed that.
So basically, they're saying only certain 555 numbers are now reserved. It used to be they were all fake because 555.
So,
which area code is 555?
It's not an area code. It's an exchange. It's the you know, so it's not your area code.
Oh,
it's the
right.
three
Six,
numbers
yeah,
after
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But. And it's even weirder, like, if you go back far enough with a lot of these, like, if you watch a movie from, like, I want to say like the 70s, 60s. You can tell when they just use real numbers too, and they're getting into trouble.
We didn't have websites back then where people would write things down. No one knew anything.
Well, what are you going to be doing in the movie theater? You're going to be pulling out your notebook, jotting down numbers.
Who remembers numbers, nerd? Go home.
Who remembers other people's telephone numbers? Like, how many other people's telephone numbers do you know?
I know.
Do you know my telephone number?
I do not know your telephone number. I do not.
Really?
No.
You don't need it? I need to know my partner's telephone number whenever I pick up food at a restaurant. That's when I need to know it.
Nope. Just use names. Anyway.
A lot of the places I go, they do it by number. So.
Finally, Jay writes.
They ask me and I'm like, I don't know. Is there a Dan Moore in there? And they're like, they eventually help me.
Did I tell you about that time that Dan needed to know your number for something and he didn't? And the guy gave Dan a real hard time about it.
Oh,
we were picking up a piece of furniture. That kitchen island that we rented a truck for that weighed 400 pounds. And they were like, we need the phone number to confirm it. And you didn't have it. And you were trying to find it in your phone. And the guy was kind of ripping you.
It must have been. I don't know why, because I do know your phone number, but I wondered if we used some other phone number.
You were buying furniture together, Dan. You have no excuse.
I don't understand why anybody
what?
Who's
our kitchen
giving
island
you...
didn't get shipped to our house?
No, Tony and I picked it up because it was incredibly heavy.
It was super heavy. Yeah.
Shipped
great
to your
challenge.
House by Tony and Dan.
I hope
you kept it forever and didn't get rid of it when you moved out of the apartment 2 years later.
We sold it.
Yep, I know.
Finally.
I hope it weighed less. Like, I guess that doesn't make any sense.
I think we took it apart and did it in like pieces.
I hope you're able to disassemble it and not carry it in one heavy box.
Yeah, that didn't work great. Jay writes, like Kat, I wondered how the lyrics for Bunky Dunko were conceived. Initially, I was dispirited when I discovered, as Kat mentioned last week, that Huddies doesn't have the development that other fictional languages do, making it unlikely there's a clear translation. There are some online translators for Huddies. That's translators in quotes, but I think they're only intended for English studies. Jay, that line just made me laugh. Putting the song lyrics in returns garbage worthy only of detention level compactor. But then I found this site, which contains all the uses of Huddies in the film and elsewhere, along with the English, which I believe they've sourced from the screenplays where possible. This is at completewormosguide.com/hut-transcript-html.
I'll put a link legitimate. In the show notes.
From here we find... This is Wado, Fwapa, Nyaga, Tolpa, Da, Bunky, Dunko. Clean the racks, then you can go home. The aforementioned Phantom Menace one. In the English version of Peter Schilling's Major Tom song, the end of the chorus is calling, calling home. In the original German, the chorus ends with completely weightless. So at the very least, they've used Bunky, Dunko there, so the end of the chorus translated to going home. Sadly, I haven't had time to search much more in depth, but the site does state that they phonetically transcribe the Huddies' words from the film, so you can't search easily for the words in the song. I'm going to have to work through it by looking for phonetic matches between the song and the page. I will, of course, keep you updated if I make any further progress.
So just to clarify,
because
I think some of our conversation about it last time was confusing, because we were confused, and there were several people that said, here is the English translation, and just sent us the Major
song.
Tom video, and
which
I was
we
like,
are aware of.
It's which we are very aware of, and I will restate again. It's clearly not exactly that, and I think this further, solidifies that they made the chorus "Bunky Dunko," going home, right, instead of calling home.
Yeah, calling
for
home,
right. Song reasons, and in addition to the other stuff, there's things in the English or German language songs where they've changed the words to
unsurprisingly,
be
Tony's
the channeling. German song did not get directly translated into English either.
Yes, because
that's how songs
that's
work.
How songs work.
Tony, you're channeling some real like professorial vibes right now.
I'm
good.
Just good. I think I've been a professor. I maybe one again, probably not. I'm just thinking that people maybe didn't understand us and that hurt me. No, I think the clearly it is inspired by the song and we're aware of it. I think I'm losing my mind when people are like, it's this song, but it's clearly not 100%
an existing song. I do agree with our pal Jason Snell, who suggested
Jason's one of the people who griefed me.
I know he did grief me. But season 2 should include they should do 99 loof balloons like in Huddies, and I think that would be pretty great.
That would be pretty good.
Jay finally says, by the way, really enjoyed episode 7 of Skeleton Crew. This show is consistently pure fun and entertainment. Whatever flaws it may have, I don't notice them because I'm enjoying the heck out of it. May Bunky Dunko be with you. And also
and with you,
Jay.
Bunky Dunko.
Well, if nothing else, this show has given us Bunky Dunko, which I think we can all agree the Acolyte did not do anything of that level.
Yeah, remember when that person emailed us and they were like, how come you're not talking about Bunky Dunko? And we're like, what are you talking about? Our lives were so incomplete.
Now we're talking about
then.
Nothing else.
But Bunky
yeah.
Dunko.
And you know what? Like, I now say it correct about 80% of the time, which there was a solid week where I was saying it correct 0% of the time.
Bunko.
I was saying all kinds of things that were to that tune that were not.
Have you seen the Blaggy Plaggy?
Yeah.
Blinky Dinky. Bunky
Blinky
Dunky.
Blinky Dinky.
Well,
Bugo.
For more discussion, please download the version of this podcast that is in Huggies.
Oh. Or wait for the transcript.
What does Dwanawanga mean?
I don't know. It's just a thing that Big Fortuna says. Mm-hmm. Dwanawanga. Dwanawango. I don't know. It's made up language. What do you want? Check the transcript website they sent us. All right. We'll be back next week with your coverage of the finale of Skeleton Crew. Series finale? Assume so, not having heard anything else. Yeah. I don't feel like this show really needs a second season, but we'll see.
I would like to do a quick round robin between the three of us.
Right now?
Right now. Do we think Jod lives or dies at the end of this season, or unclear? Like, falls off a cliff, but we don't see the body. Dan, go.
I think he lives, but if he's going to die, it's going to be falling off something. That's the only way you can die in Star Wars.
Yeah. With a Wilhelm or without a Wilhelm screen?
Without.
Okay. Tony, go.
We're getting really good at falling. Yeah, I think he, unclear. I think he gets some kind of comical, like he falls into space jail or something, you know, or he's locked in a vault with all the money that they never open again or something like that. This is a kid's show. They're not going to murder the bad
For
guy.
God's sake, Montresor.
He's not going to accidentally fall on his lightsaber. Ah!
I like that ending of getting locked into
and
the
that's
gold.
That's why we don't run with lightsabers. Kids.
I actually think that
child.
Ending, Tony, will be very similar. I will also point out, one final thing is that Jude Law spends the vast majority of the show, the entire show, in handcuffs, right? He is in handcuffs for the... it's like bizarre, more than I expected. Like, he's just constantly being captured by the other side. But yeah, I think also agree. Kid show won't die. They might bring him back.
Maybe
in The Mandalorian.
Needs a comeuppance or something.
Yeah, definitely comeuppance. The kids are going to win. That's for sure.
You know, like he accidentally skateboards into a pile of Bontha droppings or something. A paint can falls on his head.
He's not going to be like that guy that Indiana Jones boxes in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No.
With a plane propeller. It's not going to happen. We're not looking at it. It's not that kind of show. All right. We'll find out.
Long debate, because it's the internet, about whether that counts as a kill for Indiana Jones or not.
I don't think he's keeping track. He's a professor. I don't think he's got a little thing where he marks.
You don't think
marks?
He has a notch for it? Yeah. He's got, you know, one notch for tenure, one notch for...
Oh, boy. Anyway. Don't measure those against each other, because I'm telling you, bad news.
All right.
All right. We'll be back next week with our coverage of the finale. Of course, once again, you can send us letters, acp@theincomparable.com. We are at acp@zeppelin.flights on Mastodon. We are at acp.theincomparable.com on Blue Sky. I don't know why I'm listing all these things. You can find us. We're not that hard.
And HelloNerds.shop for
Hello Nerds.
Shop
for your Bunky Dunko shirts, which you should absolutely get.
They're pretty sweet.
I'll be happy if like one or two people buy a shirt.
Other than me.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And of course, we really appreciate our support from members, theincomparable.com/members, where you can sign up, get access to extra bonus content. You get access to our member Discord community, which is super fun. Sometimes there's some swag to be got as well. Yes, our member special month is going to come up not too distant future. I don't think it's been formally announced, but I could say that it's happening in the spring. So we will be announcing next week. I'm putting this in now so that we have to do it in the next episode.
You're announcing that we're going
I'm
to
going,
announce?
It's like it's like when you see the ad for the teaser trailer.
I'd like to take this moment to announce that Dan is about to announce that we will announce.
Tony, to be clear.
Whoa. Kat, do you have anything to
Wanted to announce that Tony's going to announce, that Dan's going to announce, that we are going to do a trailer or a teaser for something that's going to happen in approximately a month and a half.
I'm only doing this,
Dan,
to actually remake us have to do something by next week and make a decision. That is my entire reason.
We'll probably forget. It's fine.
All right. I would like to thank my co-hosts, Tony Sindelar. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Kat Benish.
I don't know.
Sometimes
what...
a pleasure.
I have no idea what's going on, but thanks all.
Everybody out there, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week. But until then,
Bunky Dunko.
I always thought it was impressive that in the early Indiana Jones, he's a professor at a fictional college. And then in the Dial of Destiny, he's retiring at the end of his
Columbia?
Career from a real college. Where is it?
He's somewhere in Chicago in the beginning.
No. Abner Ravenwood was at UChicago.
He's at Marshall
College. Thank you.
Which apparently was...
Abner Ravenwood is his... He studied at University of Chicago.
Yes, he studied at University of Chicago, yes.
Correct, but he's not a teacher at University of Chicago.
No, he wasn't good enough for that.
Jeez. He's
not a good professor.
He's retiring from Hunter College in New York City.
The students love him, some of them literally.
He's not a good professor.
He's about on par with a lot of other professors I had.
Do you think he grades your papers on time? No.
Do you think he grades papers?
He's got tenure. He just can do whatever he wants.
Can you imagine being a TA for Indiana Jones?
I think there's
a really
McSweeney's
funny...
article about that.
That's got to be like 3 McSweeney's articles. Kat, it's adorable that you think timeliness of grading has anything to do with academic reputation. That anything about teaching has to do with his rank and promotion.
Does he publish?
He would have to.
Well, his publisher perish, right?
Yes.
That's a good version where he's just keep having to like write his paper, but he keeps getting dragged away on adventures. Yeah. No, I gotta finish this. You understand? They'll fire me.
He does spend an inappropriate amount of time in the field, and he's clearly not doing paperwork for a lot of the provenance of these things. But he does theoretically contribute them to the museum that Marcus runs.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members